A pervert and opportunist, Harold once got a rim job from a blind dog. This is The Unshow. Hey, folks, how's it going? This beautiful, beautiful day in the cosmos. I'm the Schmooze Master, Jeff Schneider, sitting here enjoying what little enjoyment I have left. I got about 20 years to go, and I'm going to go out like a mensch. I'm here with my good buddy, Dobie Maxwell.
Seeing what condition my condition is in.
Oh, my God. Just dropped in to see what condition your condition is in.
What was that thing that you did at the top of the thing today? The heralds and rim jobs? What was that? I missed that.
A pervert and opportunist, Harold once got a rim job from a blind dog. You know, he saw an opportunity and he took it, Harold.
Harold, I'm a blind dog with a C in my hand. If I mistake you for a tree and pee, I hope you understand.
I hope you understand.
Little George Clinton for you.
I love it.
A blind dog.
I love Clinton.
I love P-Funk.
Yeah.
Make my funk the P-Funk.
No, I like any guy that can just do his thing and make a living. That's the hardest thing in commercial America, you know.
And I think that it's not encouraged. That's what really is frustrating
to
me.
No, it's not encouraged at all. Nope.
To buck the system.
Well, not buck it necessarily. Be appreciated for what you offer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the hard part. That's really what makes people nuts, that they're always thwarted and they're not doing what their authentic selves would love to be doing, you know?
There's a guy, I want to give a plug on the cast. This really helped this guy out. A friend of mine named Bob Katzman. Really cool guy.
I saw the video you sent me.
You watched it?
I watched the video, yes.
Yeah, I knew you'd dig it. I love this guy, man. He's 61 years old. He's had a couple of brain surgeries. He's had some poor health. And he's just a mensch. He's got a magazine museum in Skokie, Illinois, which is outside of Chicago, with about 130,000 magazines going back to the 1500s. And I wandered in there one day. I had some Mad magazines I was looking to sell. And I heard about him, and I walked in there and just became friends with the guy. And he sold the Mad magazines for me. This is, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And it's almost been his friend. He's just a real guy. He doesn't have a computer. He knows where all these 100,000 magazines are. And he's just, he doesn't hurt anybody. He's a dinosaur in a good way, though.
Yes, yes, yes. I saw that 15-minute documentary. Who made that?
I believe it's someone from DePaul University.
Oh, that was the students came in. Right. He was talking about the students evaluating his business and trying to help market it. And, you know, he kept talking about how computers were the bane of a lot of business models, and he knows the contents of every one of his magazines, and it's like owning a auto parts store. If you don't know where that screw is for that carburetor, if you don't know where it is physically in the store, you're out of luck. So, you know, for all these years, he's kind of maintained that business, that acumen of knowing where what everything is, what the contents of the magazines are, and it makes him totally unique.
Well, it's like they always talked about the mobsters. You know, they all had the stuff in their head. They didn't write anything down.
Yes.
And then they would die and take it to their graves, and no one could figure it out. But,
right.
You know, like
right.
The numbers business, running numbers, whatever they did. But and he had a good point. Bob had a good point. He said, what did companies do 50 years ago? The large companies, they didn't have computers. They had to have people that knew what stuff is.
That's right. That's the point. Exactly right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem, you know, living in the world. You got a guy who's an eccentric guy like that. And people go by that place and talk to him and think he's completely—he's ready for a rubber room, but yet he's one of the—he's a character that is attractive, and you like going in and talk to the guy because he's not from the mainstream. He's not—he hasn't been smashed down by the corporate hammers that want to departmentalize everybody. It's like the educational system in the United States. It's really bad, the public school system, but it manifested and designed the way it is to educate American citizens to fulfill the jobs that capitalism offers. You follow what I'm saying?
Sure.
So they need engineers. They need, they need businessmen. They need all this stuff that needs to be fulfilled and have people to fulfill it. So the educational system puts a premium on those kind of degrees, civil engineers or you know, mechanical engineers. But anybody who's creative, anybody who has artistic impulses, gets shunned and pushed to the sidelines. And for so many people who take the safe way out and say, you know, I need to make a living, I can't be an artist, I can't be a photographer, a painter, a sculptor, a dancer, a musician, because to make a living is so difficult, I'm going to become a CPA, but I'll be miserable for 30, 40 years. It'll be like the quiet desperation that Thoreau talks about, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's terrible. It's terrible. And, you know, if you can do something you really love and pay your bills and have kind of a greater cosmic presence, in a sense, I would say that's worth $50, $60, $70, $100,000 a year in happiness. A meta-narrative you need. Something that sustains you outside of the narrative of the culture or of the system. Whatever the system says is the way to be or way to behave as the preferred behavior, and that doesn't satisfy you, and that's a lot of people, including myself. You need another story to tell, you know, another creative act that fulfills you. And for me, it would be doing nudes, doing nude photography, doing the podcast, things that are so counterculture. And I'm 59 years old, for crying out loud. You know, I lived in Pittsburgh for so many years in a town that's so locked down in so many ways that if you're not a Steeler fan, what do you do? How do you act? How do you behave? It's everywhere. It's a shroud in Pittsburgh, you know, and for so many years, the town was so you worked in the steel mill and followed the Steelers. And for so many years, those mills controlled the mores and the folkways of the people. You were grateful to have a job, but you lived in a place that was dark till noon every day because of the ash from the mills, from the furnaces. Mm-hmm. And you would have to use your windshield wipers to clear away the ash from your windshield at noon. That can't be good for you. That can't be healthy to breathe that all the time. Well, you know, emphysema is huge in this town. It's like number one in the country because we live in a river valley.
Sure.
When I first moved here as a closeted Cleveland Browns fan, it's like being gay. Can't talk about being from Cleveland, man. It's forget that. They'll lynch you here.
Right.
You know, I looked around and go, oh, my God, this is it? Black and gold? Who wears black and gold? Old retired madams. You know, that's not a color combination you'd wear, you know, but they love it here. They love it. And that's why the Steelers and the Penguins are so good, because it means so much to the Pittsburghers.
Mm-hmm. So management has to put the product out to keep them coming?
I think it's very important to the management that they keep the fans satisfied. Otherwise, this town would be unlivable. You know, the climate stinks. The roads are really bad and narrow. And the bridges, and you're always in a traffic jam that you shouldn't be in based on the size of the town.
I always said if I wanted to make money, I would move to Pittsburgh and open up a brake and transmission shop.
That's right, or clutches, doing clutches. You know,
clutches, yeah.
I mean, you're always on a hill. And the potholes, man, I pass potholes here that you see people getting donkey rides to the bottom of.
That's a big pothole. Hi-yo!
And then they tell you when you get down to the bottom to exit through the gift shop. So I've been here off and on for like 30 years now.
And but you I still, chose to be there.
I did, and I made my living, and I'm grateful for that. But as an observer, It's very peculiar. It's very peculiar in a lot of ways. It's got the biggest amount of Steeler backer bars around the country, the most. Mm-hmm. It's got the most Steeler women, in other words, fans who are women of the Steelers, 2-1 over any other NFL team all over the country. It's nuts. They can't fix a fucking pothole in this town. But if you need a Super Bowl parade for 500,000 people in 24 hours, it's like a Swiss watch.
Yeah, right.
Because that's the priority.
Sure.
That's the meaning. And I'm not saying it's not okay to like your team. I'm not saying that at all. It's okay to like your team. But to the exclusion of life itself, I would say there's something wrong. I mean, you know, when they open up Dick's Sporting Goods at midnight after a championship game or a Super Bowl, and they open them up because people go down there to buy more Chazerai, You know, more baby blankets in the form of jerseys. More panties covers.
Wow. Preach it, brother.
No, I'm just saying. You know, so if you don't feel, if you're a Cleveland fan, you know, you got to be quiet, baby, you know. You know, that's like dating a black woman back in the 50s. If you're a white guy, you got to keep it quiet.
Keep it on the down low.
Yeah, they go, I'm from Cleveland. I'm sorry to hear that. Really? You're sorry to hear that. Meanwhile, they have, you know, HOV lanes, double lanes on both sides of the freeways, four lanes and four lanes on both sides of the freeways. It's flat. You can get around. You can travel. You can go from Pittsburgh to Cleveland at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and be at an Indians game at 6:30, sitting in your seat. If you were coming from Cleveland to Pittsburgh, oh, my God, you could never do it. It's all jammed up. It's terrible. Terrible. And it's they're in terrible denial, the Pittsburghers, about the horror of it in many ways, you know. So, you
know. But that's their home.
It's their home. That's their right. It's very, very sacred to them. I get it. But they should be able to hear a little negativity too, man, and go, yeah, it's kind of rough and the weather stinks. But my mother and father are here. That's very big around Pittsburgh. You know, guys who live with their moms when they're 40, 50 years old. Very big. Very big. I mean, I talk to women who date around here, and you see a lot of mama's boys in Pittsburgh.
Cause wow.
Because when you come home at 3 o'clock in the morning, shit-faced drunk, who's going to make you a steak?
Make me a steak, mama.
Right. She gets up, man. She gets out her hash mark brush, and she'll do the tighty-whities at the same time. You know? Those skid maybe, marks. She'll take those skid marks out because he got her a gold, you know, a hash mark brush with a engraving, you know, to my best girl.
Wow. This is surreal.
It is surreal, man. Yeah, so you're from Chicago, Milwaukee area, Cleveland. There's maniacs everywhere. There's NFL maniacs in every town. You know, guys just live for that Sunday. You know, they live for that.
Yeah, but in the South, I think it's college ball. It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's nuts. But I noticed in Pittsburgh, and I could be wrong because I'm here and I'm a Cleveland guy, but it seems very incestuous in a higher percentage of the fans. You go to Chicago, there's 8 million people there in the metropolitan area. You know, you'll probably have 6 million who don't give a shit about the Bears. You know what I mean? So you get a more cosmopolitan feeling if you want to escape that.
Boy, I don't know about that, man.
Yeah, maybe not. Green Bay would be the other one on the level, other one on the Pittsburgh level, because there's 100,000 people in that town, and that's the only sport they have. They don't have NBA basketball or hockey or baseball.
No, they don't.
So that's 365. That's 366, 25-8 there.
25-8, yes.
With the Packers, man. You've been up there.
Yeah, I'm from there. Milwaukee's basically a lot like that, too. They've got NBA basketball and Major League Baseball.
Yes.
But you get those blue-collar towns, man. I think it's the that whole idolization. You get a whole town full of people that go work for the man.
Yes.
And you know, it's bread and circuses, yes, from the Roman Empire.
Yeah, and I think when in the steel era, the 30s, 40s, and 50s, when it was really going hard in Pittsburgh, I think that galvanized what the pro sports meant to Pittsburghers. I do. I think that's why the management really tries hard to win championships and be in contention, because that's the great release. It's not cosmopolitan release where you can go to the symphony, you can go to the art museum, you can go to see art films.
The bathhouse.
Or the bathhouse, you know. It's the Steelers, and it's a huge focus. And it's you know, they were one of the radio stations had, Steelers 365, all-year-round radio programs about them, you know.
There's Packers is that, too.
Right, right. But it's all a hand job, you know. It's a, you know, a 365-day hand job. And if they don't win a Super Bowl, there's no happy ending for the fans.
Yeah, but if you're on that gravy train, if you're one of the guys like Jack Ham or some player from the 70s or Franco Harris, you're not buying a meal ever.
No, you're not buying a meal. You're God. You're a God. You're in Valhalla, man, you know, here. No doubt about it.
You know, they got the baseball card shows where guys are signing autographs for $30 a pop.
Yeah.
And they can make a living. You know, Rocky Blyer couldn't walk across the street. He's from Wisconsin, but, I mean, he goes to Pittsburgh. He's you know, Rocky Blyer's here, honey. Let him fuck any one of our daughters, even you.
Oh, yeah. That reminds me of a story. Rocky Blyer's traveling these little towns. looking for a place to sleep. Knocks on the door. Oh, it's Rocky Blyer. You could sleep with any one of my daughters. And that's true. That's true. These guys are gods here. You know, they're just, you know, it boggles my mind. And, you know, more so because of the 70 Steelers. I think 10 or 11 are in the Hall of Fame from that, from those teams, something like
yep.
that. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how it is. So when you're living in this town, it's, you know, for me, it's I probably have a prejudice because, you know, Cleveland has been under the thumb of the Steelers for so many years. But then again, before the 70s, the Steelers were a laughing stock. Art Rooney was a friggin' laughing stock, you know.
Yeah, they were. I was going to say, I was going to bring that up. They weren't always good. Chuck Noll turned him around.
Turned him around and, you know, shrewd draft choices. And but Art Rooney had nothing to do with it. And then he became like a folk hero, known as the Chief. They even wrote a play about him called The Chief.
Uh-huh.
And it's produced all the time in Pittsburgh, you know.
Wow.
You know, and
wow.
Yeah, right, you know. But, I mean, Lombardi's got his play. It was on in Broadway, right, Lombardi? With
sure,
Dan,
yeah.
Dan Loria from Wonder Years, the father, played him.
I heard it was pretty well received.
Yeah, I'm sure. Did they do it in Milwaukee? Did it ever come there? The road company ever come to Milwaukee to perform Lombardi?
I think it probably should have. I don't recall that it was there.
Yeah, you didn't see it, did you?
I did not see it.
No.
But it doesn't mean I wouldn't.
No, but living in Green Bay's got to be tough, man. Got to be tough. If you're not into the Packers, it's got to be tough.
It's not an attractive town.
No, and it's zero in the wintertime.
I mean, it's got a lot of the steel mills are in Pittsburgh, and Green Bay, it's the paper mills.
Yeah. So everybody worked there.
Stinks. You know, the air stinks. The tallest building I think in Green Bay is Lambeau Field.
Yeah,
it's just a nondescript Midwest town. Brutal winters.
Yeah, people are blue collar. They're on the down low their whole lives, and
heavy drinkers.
Right. You know, a lot of bratwurst. You know, swallowing.
That's San Francisco. No, but seriously, I mean, you look at the mentality of those towns. I think those people choose a lot of ways. You know, oh God, don't talk about our Packers. Don't talk about our Steelers. I joke around about it, but I'm saying I don't hate the Chicago Bears. I mean, they're people, and
right.
You know, so I think it's all us and them, and the perpetuated.
Right. No, but I do think it fills a void. You know, when you're a blue collar person and not that educated, you're a termite. You know, of reduction. And what better way to find some fulfillment than worshiping the local sports team? These guys are like Roman gladiators to you, you know, and it makes perfect sense. It fits the paradigm. And in Green Bay, with only 100,000 people, a town that could never get an NFL franchise.
Right place, right time.
1920, when they were forming the league.
With the Decatur Staleys and the Pottsville Maroons,
and Canton
Bulldogs.
And Canton Bulldogs, right. All these little towns got professional franchises because they never thought the league could get like it is now, you know, the engulf and devour nature of the NFL. So it's an anomaly, and it's a beautiful anomaly in a way, you know, that they're so rabid, and the team has been, you know, in the 5 years, the last 20 years, have been a really good team, and I think that's part of the formula. The people in Green Bay need to have the team be good, like in Pittsburgh.
I think it's more than that. I've been on the road for my entire adult life. I have never, ever, ever been on the road when the Packers are playing and had problems finding a place to watch at a Packer bar.
Right.
A place. You
right.
know what I'm saying? I lived in Reno for a while, Reno, Nevada. There was a Vince Lombardi's niece or some grandniece or something like that.
Yeah.
Owned a bar. They shipped in bratwurst from Sheboygan.
Wow.
I had a Packer jersey on. I walked in there. I thought I was back in Wisconsin. They welcome me. Hey, where are you from? Go Packers, blah, blah, blah. I think it relates to Packers, especially relate to small town America. They were on TV in the 60s when TV was spreading to the masses, you know what I'm saying? And the NFL, so in the first incarnation of that, the Packers were the team. They were the best team. And people say, oh, that's a small town. I live in a small town. I vicariously cheer for Green Bay. They're still, to this day, Packer fans all over the country.
Right,
I'm not saying
right.
there aren't Steeler fans, too.
No, they're, it's huge. It's huge. Really Rust Belty towns that have had teams for years.
Yeah.
You know, they're very big because people move around and get jobs in other cities, but they don't give it up. And, you know, like you say, there's bars everywhere that worship Packers, Steelers, Browns bars are big, you know, Cleveland Browns bars around the country. And, yeah, it means so much to everybody, you know. It just,
well, the Browns won the last championship, what, 64?
64. I was listening to the game with my dad, my uncle, and my cousin, and my brother, and it was blacked out. It wasn't even sold out at the stadium. It was blacked out. People had to go to Sandusky to get a motel room to watch the goddamn game. We listened to it on the radio.
Upper Sandusky? Nope, just kissed her goodnight.
I'm working on I got a new fragrance coming out that one of my favorite smells that I'm endorsing. It's called Asparagus.
Okay.
By Jeff Schneider.
Number five. Asparagus number five. Wow.
I love it. Yeah, so, you know, when I'm here, man, it's tough. They start jacking it up, man. People, you know, people go to the training camps. You know how it is. They're there. They take off the week for vacation with the family and go to the training camp for a week, watching guys who are not going to be on the team play. You know, it's just – and like we talk about this, the NFL are the biggest dope dealers in the country. They got the product. They got the distribution. And they're going to have – the NFL Network's probably going to have all the games, and you're going to have to buy the package for the year from the NFL to broadcast the games, unless the networks keep paying through the nose. Once they decide maybe not to do that, the NFL Network's gearing up to pick it up, and they said, okay, we'll do a $20 package, $50 package for your team for the year. You know, you can get to watch your game. DirecTV will be out. Everybody will be out. You know, so.
Yeah, but when they do that, that you're going to have, what, 20 million people paying $50 a year? That's big money, man.
That's huge money. I mean, it might be more. It might be 50 million people paying the money.
Yeah.
Paying $50. That's $2.5 billion, you know, right there and then. I don't know what their package is now, but it might be more than that.
Then they're going to sell ad time, too.
And then they'll sell ad time. That's right.
They're double dipping.
Double dipping, man, like a comedy booker. Double dipping like Ron Jeremy, man.
Swinging low, sweet chariot.
I mean, you know what his first job was? He sold footlongs at Yankee Stadium when he was 13 years old.
Ronnie J?
Yeah, he did, but mostly to middle-aged women. A lot of people don't know this.
Little mustard on it.
Ron Jeremy.
Is he in the tribe, or is he Italian?
Yes, he's a Jew.
Really?
Yes.
He's got that gefilte fish balls.
Unbelievably great man.
Got that swinging emnis.
Oh, my God.
Between his knees.
What a performer.
Performer. What's his last name?
I think it's Ronald Jeremy. No, I think it's Jeremy.
No, I think it's probably his middle name.
You think?
Yeah, I do.
I don't know. But... he's an amazing man. He's still performing. He's an artist. He's an underrated actor.
That's underrated actor.
He's fatified.
Ronald Jeremy Hyatt.
Oh, Hyatt. That's right. Like Joel Hyatt, right.
Yeah, he's born March 12th, 1953.
Oh, my God. My brother's March 12th, 1955. So Ron Jeremy is 2 years younger than me. I was born on January 12, 1953. Unbelievable.
Wow, there you go.
Oh, my God. The guy's in the Smithsonian.
I think he was the plaster caster for the speed bump.
I think you need to buy the DVD collection called Ron Jeremy, The Master Takes.
The director's cut.
They try to raise the bar of porn. The master takes.
The master takes.
The essential Ron Jeremy.
What's my motivation here?
That's right, man. I mean, amazing. Amazing guy. He was a teacher, too. And then I don't know how you fall into that and then find out you have a proclivity for keeping your Johnson hard.
Keep your Johnson hard, man.
Isn't that nuts?
He puts chicken schmutz on it.
He puts schmaltz on it, you think?
Schmaltz.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think that would fly.
It's a lubricant.
You know, he was a fairly decent-looking guy when he first started out before he became the Hedgehog, you know, nicknamed the Hedgehog.
With his mullet?
Yes, with his mullet. The guy was in, like, 5,000 movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. I don't know how you get in that business. I wouldn't want to be in that business. You know?
I don't think it would be fun.
No. Maybe one time. I don't know, but I hope to be president one day.
Yeah, well.
And you know that, you know that'll come out.
You ever see the movie Idiocracy?
Yes.
You know, the president ends up to be this this black guy that's kind of like a martial arts, mixed martial arts type fighter.
Right. Yes.
And it just, you know.
Funny little movie. I recommend it.
Very funny movie.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
It's Mike Judge.
Mike Judge and one of the Wilson brothers, not Owen, the other brother. He's in the lead, isn't he?
I don't know his name.
Yes.
Really enjoyed it. Somebody turned me on to it because I do a bit about stupid people breeding. So you got to see Idiocracy. It's like,
And it plays to the point about what corporations do. He had terrible trouble getting it distributed. They reneged on the advertising campaign. They didn't think it could make money, so they let it die.
Too bad. Yeah. Well, I love it.
Yeah, the studios let it die. But it's well done. It makes great points about culture and capitalism and advertising and how corporations really kill the creative germ, you know, smash it down, defang it, denude it, you know, because it'll maximize profits. And when profits are the only thing that you think about, great art suffers because it's got to go through that deflavorizing machine, you know what I mean, of the corporate culture. It's terrible. But that's a great little movie, Idiocracy. I recommend it.
Me too.
Yeah. I give it 3 thumbs up. That's my highest rating.
3 thumbs.
Way, way up.
Okay.
Check it out, folks. Unshow fans. I know you're fans of the Unshow here, man. We love doing the show because we're always unlocked and always unloaded. You know? That's why the Unshow is so great. You know, we can go from low to high, shifting gears, talk about existential philosophy, and then talk about defiant dingleberries that you can't jettison from your bilge.
The defiant dingleberries, didn't they open up for the
Yes, they did, man. I love that band.
They're the defiant dingleberries.
They're clinging to that ass hair, man. They won't give it up. And that's how you got to be in this world sometimes.
A dingleberry?
Yeah, defiant one.
Yeah.
You don't want to be some sad guy living with your Italian mother, methodically stroking her beard.
Don't want to be a subservient dingleberry.
What's the worst job you ever had? Worst summer job?
Oh, my God. We only have a half-hour cast, man.
Give me the worst one in 45 seconds.
I had to take urine samples at a clinic.
You had to hold the penis and point
it at the... I didn't have to hold the penis. I had a pair of barbecue tongs. I used
that. You did? Okay.
No, it was actually, it was some kind of, it was a clinic. I had a job there that was basically like a helper. And people would bring their kids in.
Yeah.
And I would have to measure the heads and see if they were macrocephalic waterheads. And they would have to give, kids have to give urine samples to see if they, you know, the sugar.
They would
go in a room and it would come out and they'd hand me this styrofoam cup with piss in it. And I have to put the pH paper in there and write down the statistics.
Yeah.
It was like a medical, like a free clinic, you know, for underprivileged people.
That's pretty bad job.
Pretty bad job. I lasted, I don't know, a few months. In the summer, I was in high school.
Wow, man. I used to complain about the jobs I had. Like, I once had a job sifting the corn out of people's shit, and I would sell them the salad bars. That was bad.
You woodshedded that. You set me up all that way for that. You wanted to put that line out there. Someone's going to be driving to listen to this podcast, and that's like, okay, I'm having this good piece of cake. I just bit into it.
The worst job I ever had, I worked at a water park called Splash Mountain on the Death Spiral, and I used to Simonize young boys.
Okay.
And I got into a lot of trouble because people didn't hear the word Simonize. They thought I said sodomize young boys. Your Honor.
And that's the truth, Your Honor. Another great punchline to a joke.
Yes. And on that note, man, we're going to pull the ripcord on this motherfucker.
Are we done?
We're done.
That's the best show we ever did.
Fuck yeah, man. Every time we do a show, we try to do a better show, and so far we've succeeded. It's amazing. It's miraculous. I want to thank everybody for listening. Listen to us on iTunes, Podomatic, PKN Radio, around from 6:30 to 7 every day, Monday through Friday, 5 to 7:30 on the Unshow Saturday Rewind. You can check us out. And we'll see you on the other side.
Thanks for listening.
We love you. Bye-bye.
Sometimes I'll feel. Sometimes. down.